The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to The She Word, conversations that women rarely have, but really should. And I am absolutely delighted to be sitting down with the Honourable Rebecca Buttigieg, who serves at the Parliamentary Secretariat for Equality and Reform. I am so glad to have you at the table. Rebecca started her career working at the Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean, where she later gained experience working abroad as a policy officer at the Permanent Representation of Malta to the European Union during the Maltese presidency of the Council of the European Union. In 2017, she started work as spokesperson for the Ministry of Economy, and most recently for the Ministry for Home Affairs, National Security and Law Enforcement. Now, Rebecca is spearheading two campaigns specifically relating to us as women, both of which have been featured here on The She Word. The first is the campaign relating to the ongoing crisis of domestic violence. And I say crisis because domestic violence affects one in four of us in our lifetime, which is quite frankly unacceptable. The second campaign relates to menstruation, and this has not only just seen the removal of VAT on sanitary products, which is amazing, and thank you for everybody who supported that, but also a real incredible initiative working with young ladies to tackling the stigma of sanitary products and menstruation. 30-year-old Rebecca is also a wife and a mother of little Valentina. Rebecca, thank you so much for sitting down with me for a pretty exciting conversation.
Thank you, Trudy, for having me. I watch your show, so it's very amazing for me to be sitting here now with you today.
I'm fangirling right now because we've got such an amazing conversation ahead of us. But before we get there, I'm fangirling because you are an MP and you are the Parliamentary Secretariat for Equality and Reform. So before we go any further, that's one big title. What on earth does that mean?
So in a nutshell, it means that I was elected in the last election. It was my first time running for a general election.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And it was a huge personal achievement for me to be able to make it my first time. And subsequently to that, I was placed in cabinet. I was nominated by the prime minister. I was appointed and I was given this portfolio, which is reforms and equality. In a nutshell, it means a lot of things. So equality is something which we work on, if it's women's rights, if it's LGBTIQ issues, if it is equal pay for equal work. We have domestic violence, which we are working on a lot. I'm also in charge of the reform when it comes to responsibility. Use of cannabis. So very controversial topics, but very important topics, which we all discuss at the dinner table all together. We all have very different opinions about them. But I think the gist of it is we're working towards having everyone being equal in our society. And I think everyone should be on board with that.
Well, you just pointed out that you said it's conversations that we have at the dinner table and so on. Not all of them are, because some of these conversations are quite uncomfortable, and it's really what the She Word is all about. So I can't think of anybody who's more suitable, having just listened to what you just said, to be sat here than yourself, because we aim to have conversations that women rarely have but really should. So many questions already kicking off in my head, but I want to just ask you a personal question. You're an MP. You got in the first time that you were voted in, and a massive, massive congratulations for that. It's just always amazing to see women stepping up and taking leadership roles. Was this something you always wanted to do from a little girl? Did you say, that's what I want to do?
It's a dream I've always had. So when I used to think about what career I wanted, I always used to go into politics. No matter what time I was in my life, it was always something I've always wanted. And I feel like I achieved the first step, so to speak. I was brought up in a house where we used to watch the 8 o'clock news all together around dinner. We used to discuss what's going on. My parents always used to, you know, have these discussions with us about what's going on in the country. I'm a huge history fan. So I studied Maltese history, European history. And there is this saying that if you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going. And I really feel like that is something which, you know, guides me a lot, because you learn so much from history. And I've always been very sensitive to what is going on around me and the effect that politics can have on people, especially in Malta when we are such a small country. So when I was 18, I immediately joined the local committee of the Labour Party in Gzira, which is my hometown. And, you know, I started speaking to people and the grassroots activism, which really attracted me to the party and the values that it holds. So I felt it was a natural shift for me to then contest the general election. And for me, it's a dream to be able to sit down across the table with all the people who are involved in, you know, making decisions and having a small piece of a say in where the country is going. And now more so than I have a daughter. It took a different meaning on for me in these past 6 months. I've always done it because I wanted and because I love my country. But now it's taken a more personal meaning because I want to work even harder to leave a better country for my daughter.
Rebecca, I've got to be really honest with you. I'm like super fangirling on everything you just said, because you just said, you know, about knowing the history of Malta. The history of Malta is just incredible. This is, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most diverse, incredible and relevant countries, certainly in Europe, if not further afield and into the world. And I love the fact that you're saying that everything that motivated you is rooted in history. And you've just mentioned your daughter, and I want to kind of go off topic just for a second, but you are a mum, you're a wife, you obviously have a home, and you're a new mum, and this must be incredibly difficult, least of all because politics is really difficult. So I'm sort of going back, I'm kind of trying to formulate all of these crazy thoughts in my head, but was there not any point in time, before we get to you being a mum in politics, was there not a point where you just said, actually, you know what, this is going to be tough. I'm going to be criticised. I'm going to be up for every, you know, bad word that anybody wants to say, as well as obviously all the good stuff. Did it not just ever put you off?
It does put me off a bit, but at the same time, it's a conscious decision which I made. So you have to go into politics knowing you're going to be up for scrutiny. And at the end of the day, you should be, because you are elected by the people. You should be scrutinized by them. And you have to have a gold standard when it comes to, you know, public life. So I get that part of my job. What I don't get is being insulted personally. And that, I think, is what makes politics off-putting for certain people. It's because sometimes we're not debating ideas, but we're debating, you know, each other's personal lives. And that shouldn't be the case, in my opinion. Again, politics is a really beautiful tool, and I feel that we don't get that the positive out of it as much as we should. You really do change people's lives with changing a law, with changing a policy. And for me, one of the most beautiful parts of politics, which at the beginning I was a bit hesitant to make, because, you know, in Malta we use house visits as our main, you know, method of campaigning. Mm. And I was a bit skeptical as to how that would go, because, you know, you're literally randomly knocking on people's doors, asking them to let you in and introducing yourself and what values you stand for, and asking them essentially to vote for you, for them to believe in you. And funnily enough, that's one of the most beautiful parts of politics. It's the part I love doing so much, because it's taught me so, so much. It's made me meet so many different people from different walks of life. It makes you conscious about realities which you never even thought existed in your little tiny country. Because we live in a bubble, you know. Mm. I have my reality, you have your reality. But when you speak to people, when you go into their homes, and surprisingly, Maltese people let you into their home and into their life, and they just explain to you everything that's going on in their lives. They're very, very open with their personal experiences. And it's from there which, you know, you get the inspiration to make certain changes, because right. A law might be perfect on paper, but then when it comes to practice, you'll see that, listen, it's not working for these kinds of people. And for me, that is one of the most beautiful things about politics. What I don't like is the after effects of it, you know, that if you're putting forward an idea, people are not insulting the idea or attacking what you're saying. They're just attacking how you look, for example, or if you're talking about, you know, a controversial topic. It shouldn't be controversial at the end of the day. If we're talking about menstruation, the comments I got, because we are talking about something which is, you know, supposedly private, or I'm wasting my time on petty issues. This is what we should be talking about. And I feel that it's very telling that in 2024, we do have these comments. So that is more than ever I think that my portfolio, when it comes to equality, is more relevant than ever in 2024, mm-hmm. when we are seeing the extreme right taking on a life of its own in the US, in Europe. Mm-hmm. So now more than ever, we should really be having these conversations.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And we're going to talk about gender and gender empowerment a little bit later on, because you mentioned something back there about being criticized for the way that you look. And you just, there are so many paradoxes and just things that don't make sense between how men and women are treated in power. You know, a man is assertive and a woman is difficult, and all yes. these sorts of, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'm going to come back to, I love this story, this idea of you going around and knocking on people's doors. And you're absolutely right. That's how you change your own thoughts, and how you can change the where the country is going is by meeting people and actually hearing their stories and understanding their stories. Huge privilege for me being involved in the mm-hmm. She Word is I meet people and they want to share their stories. But that takes a lot of work.
It does.
And you are a brand new mum. So I'm already in awe of mums, because they are really superheroes. But has that changed for you at all? You've got your daughter and you want to shape Malta for your daughter, but that must be really hard work.
It is. And I'm not going to lie, it's very, very hard. I feel like as women, we are very prepared when it comes to 9 months of pregnancy. But then what happens after, we're not really prepared for what that actually entails. I'm not talking about the big milestones. I'm talking about the small things, you know, trying to be good at everything. And trying to ensure that, you know, you get enough sleep, you have to make sure the baby is okay, that you have the home is set up, that you're perfect at your job. It's tough. I'm not going to beat around the bush. It is very tough. And it's been a really tough few months. But more than anything, it's made me more mindful of my time. So if before I could afford to have a meeting, which, you know, takes longer than it should, now, if I have 30 minutes, it's going to be 30 minutes, and it's not going to be more, because at that time I have to be home and I have to be with my daughter. So it's made me more organized in a sense. It has given me this sense of, you know, organization, which I was a pretty organized person before, but now it's taken on a life of its own. So now I'm very, very more scheduled. I have to pick her up. I have to take her with me. She comes with me to Parliament. So yes, she's been exposed to that arena already.
Oh my good grief.
Yeah.
How did that go down?
Quite good, actually. And to be honest, I found a lot of support from my colleagues as well. You know, if I'm speaking and she's next to me and they're seeing her fussy a little bit, someone takes her immediately. And I've found a lot of support as well.
That is so cool. Oh, my word. Well, I'm hoping that that kind of example will encourage other women, because we'd love to see more women stepping up. You know, I've mentioned before that I grew up with amazing, amazing role models in my life on ruling the country I grew up in. And I think it's women like yourself that really motivate other women to step up and start thinking and considering about how they can shape the future of the country. And we need women and men.
Yes, it's
this
both.
This cannot be done just by men, because women have a 50% viewpoint with regards to what happens in the country, and our perspective is not necessarily the same as our male counterparts. Look, I love the idea of you turning around and saying, sorry, I've got to leave, our 30 minutes is up and I'm going. It's making me a tiny bit nervous. But tell me, Rebecca, what does a day look like for you as an MP, as somebody who's spearheading the Parliamentary Secretariat for Equality and Reform? What does a day look like?
It's never the same. But it's always, you know, they say that it takes a village to raise a child, and it really does. I couldn't do it without my husband, who is extremely supportive, and my mom, who is also my backbone when it comes to, you know, raising my child as well. And my staff at work, they've all been incredibly supportive as well. So a typical day would be, you know, you wake up really early in the morning if you manage to sleep, because that's besides the point, because obviously she's only 6 months and, you know, she's still settling into her sleeping routine. So it really depends on her. If we had a good night, that means, you know, that the morning is a bit less stressful than it would be. But, you know, it's getting her ready. It's dropping her off at childcare or taking her with me to work. It really depends on the day and what commitments I have. It's getting the house ready. It's doing so many different things. Parliament is obviously a huge aspect of my work, and cabinet meetings as well. But mostly I always carve out time for house visits, which is done regularly, at least every week. And then
And this is you just literally going around to see
my
people in
the
constituents and finding out their viewpoints.
Finding out their viewpoints, being in touch with them, because I feel that as an elected representative, I cannot go and knock on doors on the eve of an election. That's very unfair to my constituents. They gave me their faith, they gave me their vote, so I should be in contact with them regularly. And that's not just done through house visits, though. I'm also very present when it comes to other events which are taking place in my constituency. I try and be present as much as possible. Also trying to balance, you know, some time with my family as well. So that is always the balance which I'm trying to do. It's not easy at all. And if I didn't have a very understanding family, I wouldn't be able to do it.
I'm blown away. Do you find time for yourself?
These past 6 months, it's been hard. So no, I don't think so.
I'm always asking mums. It's come up on the show over and over again. And as I was listening to you, I'm exhausted.
Now, if I manage to have a shower in peace, that's already a huge win for me.
Oh my word. It's what I keep hearing on the show. I keep hearing mums saying, well, listen, if I get to go to the bathroom by myself, if I get to do this, let alone get your nails done, get your hair done and all sorts of things. You look beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. But that's also an added burden, which we don't really think about. Before, you know, I used to have a standing appointment. I used to go and do my hair every Monday. Now that's not the case either, because obviously it takes time. And I don't have that time sometimes. I have to prioritize other things. So it's something which men don't have to think about. Sometimes I think it's a blessing and a curse for us. I love getting dolled up, but at the same time, sometimes it's too much because, you know, I have to look good because I'm always in front of cameras. But anyway, that's something I have to deal with, I guess.
Wait, are you just echoing other mums? I mean, you to a much more elevated level, because you've just mentioned there again, of course, you're in front of a camera, so you have to look your best. I mean, this is a lot going on for you. But even mums that I've met have just said, having time for themselves is their least priority.
Yeah.
So you've massive, massive respect. Now, you've mentioned your daughter and you've mentioned the fact that you are more driven because you're thinking of her and her future. But I want to focus on right now, before we get to what the world might look like for her, what do you see as Rebecca Buttigieg, what do you see right now as the biggest challenges facing women? Not necessarily in Malta, we'll come to Malta in a second, but more globally, what's the thing that's really bothering you, the thing that you say, okay, this is just not on?
What's really concerning me is what's happening online. So we're living our lives mostly online as well. You don't even have to leave your house to get basic stuff done. You don't have to leave your house to get your shopping done. You don't have to leave your house to eat because it can be delivered straight to your door.
Right.
Even your coffee lately. So what we're seeing that's happening online and how fast people are to vilify women in certain positions especially, and also the online misogyny that we're facing. And also this brings me to other issues. The fact that, for example, online social media is giving us a different reality of what women are meant to be, what you're meant to look like, how you're meant to you know, behave. And I'm feeling that this online world is providing false expectations, but more than that, it's effectuating gender stereotypes, which I thought we would have already removed. So there is this phenomenon called trad wives. I don't know if you've heard of.
Called what?
Trad wives. They are these social media influencers who are traditional women who, you know, make their own butter, make their own shampoo, and they stay at home and they raise a billion kids.
Right.
And they are kind of judging other women for having a career, for example. And that is bringing a conversation, even with the younger generation, that they don't want to have. For example, if you speak to some young people, you say, no, I want my wife to stay at home. And that is perfectly okay if that is her choice and if it's the best choice for the family. Mm. But we're seeing a shift all of a sudden, and the misogyny that they're facing, even when it comes to someone, you know, like reporting sexual harassment, for example, the comments that you see, well, she would have asked for it. What was she wearing?
Yep.
You know, the constant blaming and vilifying of women. And that is what really concerns me, because in this day and age where we have so much access to information, so much access to education, somehow we're seeing it having the opposite effect.
Well, we were having this conversation before we sat down at this table, and one thing that really lays heavy with me, and it's one of the reasons that I love the She Word so much, is that we're seeing that the world, society, has changed so much since I was 15 years old. So let's take a 15-year-old. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have the internet. The internet came about when I was in the workplace. We were designing the first websites, let alone social media. So culture has changed. Society has changed so dramatically. Women have only been forging out careers for themselves since the Second World War. Yeah. So much has changed in such a short period of time, let alone changed here in Malta, but changed globally, that we don't have the education. We haven't had the time to adjust to it. We haven't had the time to adapt to it. And it's really interesting what you're saying about these tradwives making butter. I need to go and look this up because I have no idea about tradwives making butter. It's definitely not something I would be doing. Exactly. I mean, not even mums have time to make butter, from what I understand. Where do they get the cows? No, that we could go down a whole route about where they get the cows from and so on and so forth. But I'm going to go and look that out, because that does seem to be something that I've heard recently in an interview I had myself, was that only when you're looking at this misogyny, there only needs to be a glimmer of truth for the hate and the young men to jump onto it, because men also are losing their identity. Their identity has changed as women have changed. And what we've ended up in is a very complicated scenario where we think we're going to all be empowered by social media, internet, and so on and so forth, and being able to travel. It's actually not happened because there's not been the guidance for society.
I think social media has been revolutionary even when it comes to communicating with other people, because it has a lot of positives. But then we're seeing a negative effect that it's having on the new generation mostly, because as you said, I grew up, I'm 30, but I had, you know, Facebook was still new, so sometimes even I scroll through the old statuses and I'm like but
I was doing that the other day.
It's a really great walk down memory lane. But most of the things is that it didn't have such a profound effect on us, in the sense that we weren't constantly glued to our phone. And that is what really concerns me today. These conversations that we need to have, and the biggest threat to equality, in my opinion, is the misinformation that we are seeing and the spread of fake news. Because we've achieved so much, but then what's happening online is not reflecting what is actually reality. So what I'm seeing is that we need to be much more organized in getting our message across on social media, because most people get their news from social media. They don't even look up, they don't even put on the television anymore. I mean, I said that I grew up in a household where we used to watch the news every day.
Yep.
Today, I don't think if you ask people if they do watch the 8 o'clock news, I don't think many young people do. So where are they getting the information from? What kind of information are they getting? Are we teaching critical thinking? Are we teaching people to, you know, verify the sources where they're getting that information? And that is my biggest concern when it comes to equality, because the way certain fake news takes on a life of its own and spreads like wildfire and alarms people is something which really concerns me, especially because I don't think we are giving enough tools for people to be prepared for them to make their own judgment at the end of the day. It could be we don't agree on what the outcome is. I mean, I have my viewpoint and you have yours, but let's at least debate facts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not myths.
We had a show recently on women and the question of critical safety. And one of the ladies on that show said that there are young people growing up today, and you said it yourself, who don't know anything other than social media. So whereas we might have, as you mentioned, those scary old Facebook posts where we would have the opportunity to say, okay, well, that's Facebook. And I keep saying this, let's face it, social media is not out there to be our friend. It's out there to make money, essentially. Mm-hmm. It is a tool, and we have to have an approach to it as a tool, and the skepticism that goes with seeing something as a tool. But there's young people that have never known any other life than everything that goes on social media, and therefore they don't have the opportunity to question. They don't have the awareness to be able to question. Bringing that to a local context, because I love what you're talking about here. I love that viewpoint. But we have a bit of an added complication in Malta, in that social media and social media platforms, online platforms in Malta also using Maltese language are able to escape around a huge number of safeguards. You know, if I wanted to go out and say something in English on a lot of platforms, my videographer tells me, you can't say that in the first 30 seconds. And he's absolutely bang on. He's the expert. But you can in the Maltese language. And so there's an added layer of complication.
No, you're absolutely right. And I feel that even us as politicians, we have to make more of an effort to communicate on social media responsibly, also in the way, you know, we get our message across, because people need to know exactly what we stand for and what we're working on. So when people ask me, but what do you do? What exactly is equality? And I'd really try my best to, you know, get that message across on Facebook, on social media. But then it might not resonate with everyone. I might not reach everyone. So podcasts like yours are a very good platform for us to reach a certain segment of the population as well. But when it comes to Maltese, we do need to be more creative as a political class to be able to communicate with mainstream Maltese people at the end of the day, not just through news articles or news bulletins, etc., but actually, you know, be on the ground. And that's why I think house visits have always been a very regular part of my routine every week, because otherwise you're never going to get that interface and get to know exactly what they understand and what they're thinking.
I like what you said about what they understand as well, because we can say whatever we want, but it depends how somebody is receiving that.
Also,
well, let's keep it local to Malta. What are you seeing as the biggest challenges in Malta for women right now?
I really go back to online hate and online misogyny. But I also think that we have a huge problem when it comes to mentality. Because we still have these traditional gender roles in our minds. And not just men, also women. We did, the NCP, which is the National Commission for the Promotion of Equality, did a study, and it asked women as well who they think should be the main carer, or who should assume the main caregiving role in the household. Men answered women, but overwhelmingly, even women themselves said that it should be the woman to take on that. So that brings me to the way we are brought up, the way we are told that, you know, we have to be good at everything. It's your job to be perfect at your job, to be a really good wife, to be a really good mother. And really and truly, you cannot be at 100 in all aspects. It's unrealistic. And it puts you in an even worse position because you think you're failing, when in fact you're not. And I'm going through this right now personally as well. But what I see is that, I'll give you an example. When I was pregnant, and we are quite a young parliament. I mean, the average age is 40. So we have a lot of young politicians who are having kids right now, who are building their family, not just women, but also men. But people asked me how I am going to manage my job. They didn't ask my male colleague, who is also a father of a young child, how he's going to manage his ministerial duties with being a father. So just the fact that there is that question goes to show that being a woman in politics, but more so being a mother in politics, it's a completely different ballgame.
That's incredible. You know, I've talked to mums sitting at this table. You mentioned something back there about being 100% good at everything all the time. And this mum guilt, I remember in the very first show talking about parenting, I said, what was the biggest surprise? And Melissa Gatt said, I didn't expect the guilt. Because we do, as mums, expect to be perfect at everything. Because we, as women, are expected to look good, to have a perfect home, to keep the perfect home clean, to have a perfect career, and also to bring up the children as well. Now, here's the irony. The irony is that in a lot of countries in Europe, women are now doing as well as men, if not outperforming men. I think in the UK, women between 18 and 30 for the first time are earning more than their male counterparts in parallel jobs. But you can't be perfect at everything, because women are just going to burn out. But we want to have that social equality. We want to have that career equality, the gender equality.
Yeah.
So what is the way to tackle that? Where on earth do we start with this?
So first of all, by having role models who show us that, you know, women in politics are just as good as men. I resent the implication that just because I am a mother in politics, I cannot do my job just as well as my male counterpart, who is also a father of a young child. So the starting point should be that you can do both. And we can do both. As I said, I've become much more organized in the past 6 months because you have to. My job entails that I am on the ball, and so does me being a mom. But at the same time, we need to also have these conversations. We need to ensure that we have a structure that allows people, not just women, but also men, to have a family and be good at their jobs. Something which really strikes me is that, you know, people ask me, but your husband really supports you for you to be able to do all this. I'm pretty sure that, again, my male counterpart does not get the question, your wife supports you to be able to do this, because somehow the wife of a minister is expected to help. The husband of one does not. Again, I am extremely lucky with my husband. It was always something that, you know, we've always shared the responsibilities equally, irrespective of my job. But not every man is willing to do that. And that is also a conversation we need to have. Mm. So when I see that there are other young women in politics like me who are having a child and, you know, doing their job just as well. I mean, I mentioned Miriam Dalli, for example. She is Minister of Energy and Environment, which is a massive ministry. She is the mother of two kids and she's doing fantastic on both fronts. So why don't we celebrate these women? But more than that, let's have structures that allow us to do that. So, for example, we do have, as a society, we tell women you should breastfeed as much as possible because that is really good for your child, etc. Fine. But then you don't have the structures to support that. And I went through it myself. We do not have facilities in Parliament to be able to feed your child, but also do your job 100%. And you don't understand it unless you go through it. So let's say we do want to have more women in politics. Fine. Perfect. I am 100% on board with that. But we need to change the structures that we work with as well.
And if it starts at the top, then obviously that cultural change hopefully will feed through to everyone, because everybody is experiencing the same thing. I know in recent conversations that, again, in companies, I've spoken to C-level women who their companies want them to come back to work as soon as possible. But for that interim period, they're going to be breastfeeding, or they're going to be pumping, or they're going to be doing whatever they do to give the best to their child. And that's not catered for. And in fairness, as you just said, unless you're in it, you wouldn't know it.
We don't talk about this enough.
I wouldn't know. I mean, I'm not a parent, so I wouldn't know the challenges that you have. But good for you standing up and making a noise about it, because that's what we need to be doing. So if those are the kind of challenges that we're facing in Malta as a society, what are the opportunities that are there for women inside and outside of politics?
There are many opportunities. I feel like we've come a long way as well. If we had to talk about, you know, where we were 30 years ago, it was completely different than the where we are today. And I see this also personally. I've seen a huge shift in the way we talk about certain topics. I used to go to an all-girl church school. So as much as I used to love the school I went to, we were never taught to have conversations like menstruation, for example. And it affected all of us. So if you're not going to teach women about menstruation, let alone teaching the men. So now we do have those conversations. And I was brought up in an environment where, you know, these conversations were not to be had. You shouldn't talk about sex. You shouldn't talk about menstruation. You shouldn't talk about things which might make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. But then I went abroad. I started speaking to other people who came from different backgrounds. And I realized that, you know, this is normal. Everyone goes through it. So let's talk about it. And if you're not going to talk about it, we're not going to be able to educate people. And I'm a firm believer that education is the key to changing the world. If we're not going to be able to speak to each other and have frank conversations, there's no way we're going to be able to, you know, make a huge leap forward when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to all sorts of issues, when it comes to equality. Mm. But again, in Malta, I think we have a huge opportunity because we're a small country, so we can make change much quicker than maybe other countries can. At the same time, we can understand and we can have conversations easier because we are a small country. So if I want to speak to my constituents, for example, it's much easier for me to be in touch with them than if I were a politician in America, for example. But at the same time, that smallness sometimes hinders our progress in a certain extent, because change is a bit difficult for us to accept as well.
You hit the nail right on the head when you're talking about these conversations of menstruation and sex and so on. For me, it was menopause.
A topic which we don't talk about
enough. Oh, and it's going to happen. And this is one of the things, you know, you picked on menstruation, periods, sex, and I've added menstruation. All of these three things are inevitable. They're not, I mean, I guess sex is optional, but the other two for women are, you can't do anything about it. They're going to happen. And really what we've been sitting here at the table doing is trying to unpack as much as possible why there is shame. Mm-hmm. And then saying, I'm sorry, but if it's going to happen to you anyway, then we should be talking about it. Because when I got to menopause, I didn't even know what menopause was. I wasn't having hot flushes and have really had to go on my own journey to find out what that's all about. But that is going to affect every single woman. And just as you're talking about these topics, they affect every single woman. So I'm thrilled that that is the priority for you to have those conversations and to empower women. Now, we've talked about menstruation and the campaign with menstruation, you know, VAT being abolished from sanitary products. I am so over the moon about, and I am so unbelievably thrilled. And that is really landmark for Malta, because only Ireland in the EU is doing that. So that's Malta really stepping up and doing something incredible. And hopefully all of the other EU countries will follow suit, because putting VAT on something that is essential to women is just ridiculous.
And it's something which, you know, a lot of people don't really realize that that women are taxed for something which is completely essential. But then I got a lot of positive feedback about this from a lot of women from all kinds of backgrounds. They were all really kind of like, yes, finally, you know, we're discussing something which affects us, but not just us, also the men in our lives. Because, I mean, you're going to meet someone who menstruates at one point in your life, yep, unless you live in a box. And the thing is that having these conversations, also the fact that I'm talking about them in Parliament, sometimes you do get a bit weird looks from, you know, certain politicians of a certain age who, you know, this is the House of Representatives, you should be talking about very serious stuff. But this is a serious topic. This is a serious topic.
Yeah.
And we need to have these conversations at the highest level of our government at the end of the day, because otherwise we're not going to be able to move forward when it comes to other more important policies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other part to that, of course, is the reducing and eliminating the stigma of menstruation. The campaign Stop the Stigma, period. Love it. Brilliant. Fantastic. And I'm so thrilled that that's actually happening, because I think that's something, again, that's very aligned with what we're trying to do with the She Word. And that's just having those conversations, seeing the visibility on not just the conversations, but the actual products themselves, and making sure that these conversations are happening. But you've mentioned several times, we've talked about domestic violence, and this is also part of your concern. And this is something that really breaks my heart. 2.9 million cases of domestic violence were reported in the UK last year. 36.5% of the US population will experience domestic violence in one way, shape or form during their lifetime. You know, I'm really choked up actually trying to even to relate these statistics, because here in Malta, 1 in 4 will experience domestic violence. 1 in 3 will experience intimate partner violence in their lifetime. And quite frankly, this is unacceptable. And when beyond unacceptable, it's abhorrent. When we look at how far we've come as society, and we think that we're there, you've mentioned 100 reasons why we really aren't, and there's a lot of regression going on. But you just think that, why are we still here? Why are we still doing this? And we had a show a while back, and obviously we've recorded another show with regards to domestic violence. And when I hear stories of women who've experienced it, I myself have been in that situation, it is heartbreaking beyond just the violence, but all of the implications that go with that. And I'm really glad to see that this is a conversation that you're having. So what is the concern, and what is the action? Where are we going with this topic?
So as you said, domestic violence is one of the worst criminal offenses, I think, that someone can commit, because you are committing violence on someone you are supposedly love and care for.
Supposedly, yeah.
Which is something which is very difficult to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
What we are doing, we have given it a huge priority, and we're working not just as a parliamentary secretariat, but also through different ministries, the Justice Ministry, the Home Affairs Ministry, and the Social Affairs Ministry, because this is not a problem of just one sector.
Yep.
It spans across different institutions in the country as well. We have done a lot of work. So when I look at where we were as opposed to where we are, we have done a lot of work. We have poured a lot of more resources when it comes to the police. We have a special unit of the police, which is fully trained on domestic violence issues. There are 65 police women and men and women working on domestic violence, which for our country is a big number. We have established a hub, which is specifically for domestic violence victims. And we're working on opening another one in the northern part of the country. We are also increasing resources for the judiciary to have 3 full-time magistrates working on these cases to be able to remove the backlog that there is.
Say that again. 3 full-time magistrates just working on domestic violence cases. That is absolutely brilliant.
We are trying to make sure that when a report is done and when charges are filed, there isn't a huge delay when it comes to the court cases. Of course, there still is. And we acknowledge that there is a lot more work to be done.
Yeah.
But we are committed to making sure that, you know, this is one of our priorities. And in that sense, we have our 3rd national strategy, which is guiding us for the next 5 years. What I see as being an issue at the moment is also the fact that domestic violence in the mind of many people is physical violence.
Yep.
We always see, you know, these campaigns of women with a black eye, or, you know, they're crouching down in the corner, hiding away from their perpetrator. And that, of course, is domestic violence. But today we are seeing something which is completely different. Online violence.
Yeah.
Emotional violence. Psychological violence.
Financial.
The manipulation, the control. And for me, it is what we are really stressing on is our national campaigns to educate people on what domestic violence could look like.
Yeah.
What really unsettles me is seeing young women in their 20s relinquishing their control, all because they didn't realize that that is a form of violence as well.
Mm.
And it's something which really scares me, because this brings me to what we were talking about before. Online media and social media is giving us a warped vision of what relationships should look like. You know, you shouldn't like, he checks your likes or who's in your DMs. We should have a joint profile on our Facebook. You know, God forbid someone texts me and tells me something. Small aggressions, small, maybe not huge red flags at the beginning, but somehow over time they escalate into something much, much bigger. And what we need to focus on is educating our young women what a relationship should look like.
Absolutely.
And what a safe one should be. So for me, one of the most important things is financial independence.
Yeah.
And we've done a revolution when it comes to that in the country. Today, we have the highest rate of women working in the country because of policies we've implemented. Childcare for free is something which benefits the family, yes, but it has given a woman a liberation to be able to get into the workforce. And her having her own income can help her leave a relationship which is violent. And I think we're underestimating how important that is.
Yeah.
Financial literacy. Are we teaching our women, our girls, that, you know, you should have your own account. You should be accountable for your own money. You should pool in together. Yes, I have a joint account with my husband, of course. But I would never relinquish my salary, because you never know what might happen.
Mm.
And I see too many young women relinquishing that control, or not perhaps realizing that that is manipulation.
Mm.
And I think that is where we really need to focus on.
Bang on. I honestly, I couldn't agree with you more in recent conversations that we've had, both with yourselves and also prior to that. The financial control was very prominently a part of women not being able to walk away from violent situations. And as you just said, it's not just violence. It's not just being punched in the face. It's not just, and thank you, because those campaigns are important, but they're also misleading. Because also, as you said, it doesn't start with that. It starts with something much, much smaller. And those red flags, whilst they might be tiny red flags, we should be looking out for them, and they're educating young women to be able to identify with. But there's also, I also would love to see, and just from a personal point of view, educating men and young men, all men, not just to change their approach to domestic violence, but also to call out other men. Because I think that through all of this conversation that we've had, you've kept going back to a culture, a cultural change. You've talked a lot about online. You've talked a lot about what's happening there. And we need our men. Our men have an incredible role to play in calling out bad behavior. Because if we turn around and say, well, you can't say that, it would be really easy to be brushed off with the Andrew Tate kind of mentality, or that's the woman, she needs to stay in her own place. But when another guy calls out that behavior, that's when we can start to see cultural change from men. And it'd be great to see that happening as well. As you mentioned, that's all part of education. Rebecca Buttigieg, I am fangirling all the way, but I want to just ask you one last question. What would you like to see as your legacy as a woman of empowerment?
That's a bit of a tough question to answer, because, you know, you work on so many things and you have so many goals that you want to achieve, that at the end of the day, if you manage to get them all done, it's a huge feat. But more than anything, I just want to be, I want to use my time and to use my position to change and to push in forward policies that help people in their lives, no matter what that policy might be. So, for example, this zero VAT on sanitary products for me is a huge win. And I think that is something which is of personal satisfaction as well. So, you know, when I'm 80 and I'm old and I'm looking at what I did in my life, I'll be like, okay, that's something I worked on. And all the other laws that we implemented, it's a huge personal satisfaction when you meet people or you get a message in your Facebook and they tell you, listen, with this, I improved my life. And I think that is the biggest satisfaction you can have. And that's what politics is all about. We need to come back to that kind of politics, because it's the best tool you can have. And we need to make sure that we use it the way it was always intended to be used.
I'm actually quite emotional. And I, just as you were saying that about being 80, I was thinking about you sitting there with your daughter and your grandchildren and maybe even great grandchildren and saying, you know what? You know why you don't pay for VAT on sanitary products? Because I made change. And obviously on so many other areas. Rebecca, it has been an absolute honor to sit at this table with you. I am really, really astoundedly impressed by the things that you have come across and shared with me. And I look forward to seeing much, much more of it.
It was a pleasure, Trudy.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.